This is Madeline Bell, President and CEO of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Welcome to Breaking Through. The last season of my podcast focused on how our breakthroughs make a difference for patients. In the next several episodes, we'll talk about some of the challenges we're tackling. I'll be speaking with several CHOP experts about how CHOP is solving the toughest challenges in pediatrics and where we need to help. Today, I'm here with Dr. Katherine Turner. Welcome, Dr. Turner. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Thank you, Madeline. My name is Dr. Katherine A. Turner II. I am a triple boarded physician. Those boards are child and adolescent psychiatry, adult psychiatry, and pediatrics. Because I think about kids mostly, I don't do very much adult psychiatry. I did my pediatrics training at Stanford, and I did my psychiatry training here at CHOP and at Penn. Prior to becoming a physician, I was a middle school teacher. And so all of my life, I've been focused on how can I help the whole child in front of me.
Wonderful. So I'd love to hear your story. Triple boarded means that you're trained in many different fields, and pulling all that information together makes you a really great leader here at CHOP. So many people ask me, what is the right term for us to use when we're talking about mental health? Is it mental health? Is it psychiatry, psychology, behavioral health? I hear it referred to many different ways. So could you explain that to me and to our listeners?
Sure. The term that I prefer when we're talking generally about mental health is mental health, because everybody has mental health. And when we think about mental health, we think of that as on a continuum from thriving to really struggling and not doing well. I think the thing that's hard for me with the term behavioral health is that it implies volition. It's as if you could say, well, if you just changed how you were behaving, your health would be better. But that's not really true. People don't choose to be addicted. People don't choose to have schizophrenia or psychosis. People don't choose to be anxious. Anxiety is actually hardwired as part of the human condition. I prefer the term mental health because I think it actually stresses where we all are as part of the human condition. And when we're talking specifically about what happens in a psychiatric unit, then I talk about psychiatry because that's the medicine that's being delivered there.
Well, that's all so helpful. And by the way, I have a child who's a psychologist. I'm super proud of him and his work. And I just learned a little bit from you about his profession. So let's talk about what so many of us have been speaking about recently is the crisis that children are facing with their mental health. And so many people are asking, what's behind that? Why has it increased so much? And what could we do about it? And you and I will talk about what we here at CHOP are doing about it.
I think that one of the things that people are tired of hearing is the word pandemic or epidemic. But I will say that for kids' mental health, we've probably been in an epidemic for a good 25 years. One of the things that the public health emergency associated with the COVID-19 pandemic brought out was the fact that our kids are maybe suffering more. And when parents were home with kids and people who weren't maybe spending as much time with their children were seeing them and seeing how much the lack of social interaction based on some of our restrictions against interaction to help prevent the spread of this illness, we saw what was going on. And in the fall of 2021, the Children's Hospital Association, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, declared a pediatric mental health emergency. It's not that we didn't see this coming. Suicide rates have been going up for many years. What we saw was that more people became aware of it. So things have gotten worse. I think that the public health emergency certainly did compound for some kids. You know, at that time, I was also working inpatient. And we saw kids I probably would have never seen if there hadn't been the disruption from school. You know, we saw kids who are actively engaged in sports, actively engaged in theater or music, and all of these things kids couldn't access. So some of the things that our children and young adults were doing to sort of be in that thriving part of their mental health were taken away. And you can never underestimate the importance of social interaction. And I think that for a lot of our youth, that was fairly damaging. Well, I think one of the things that we know is that anxiety disorders happen pretty young. You can have an anxiety disorder even a kindergarten or even younger. Selective mutism is one example of that, where kids really feel like they just can't talk in situations. That's one we often see in very young kids. And here at CHOP, Dr. Wanjiku Jirogi, who is one of our nationally known child and adolescent specialists in early childhood psychiatry, so she works with the 0 to 5-year-old realm, can talk about what research is going on, how we're looking at what's happening to our very young children, and what can we do to sort of help stave off some of this. Additionally, one of the things that there's still quite a bit of research going on, but I think from an anecdotal standpoint, I can say social media has really changed the landscape of what life is like for a young adult, an adolescent, or even children. Children younger and younger are being inundated with constant 24-hour presence of others, of media, of messages about what you should look like, what a perfect life looks like. We see our athletes also being inundated with this ideal that they have to be perfect. So not only are we seeing an increased rate of suicide among some of those young people who appear to be doing very well, we're seeing it even in our young kids. There was a study right before the public health emergency went into effect that showed while some rates of suicide were going down among African-American boys between 5 and 11, those rates were rising. I know it's probably hard to think of a 5-year-old thinking about intentionally taking their life, but this is something that really does happen. The CDC didn't used to cover this age range until they realized this actually is something that happens. And despite everything that is going on, suicide is the second leading cause of death in kids 10 to 24. That's like our fourth graders, our fifth graders. Right now, with that statistic, if you think about it, kids are more likely to die from suicide than any other natural illness.
That's pretty frightening. And I've also heard some other really frightening statistics. I'm wondering if there are some others that you can share with us that kind of put a finer point on what you're talking about.
Well, I think one that is probably most striking is that 1 in 5 children and adolescents have a diagnosable mental health condition. And of those, only about 1 in 3 are actually getting treatment. So the majority of kids who have conditions that could receive treatment aren't actually getting it. And we know that if we do treatment early, we can have much better outcomes for kids.
So we've talked about what is mental health. We've talked about how we're seeing increased rates and how concerning that is for all of us. Can you talk a little bit about what we're doing here at CHOP?
We opened the Center for Advanced Behavior Health, and that gave us a much larger footprint in doing some outpatient work when we moved into that space. We also have made a collaboration with Girard College to offer school-based therapy and medication management for the Girard College students. We are moving into some of the elementary schools within the School District of Philadelphia to offer therapies and other interventions in the school. Most kids go to school. And so if we can deliver therapy in a place where we know we can reliably reach kids and they can remain in the community, we can sometimes prevent worsening of illness to the point where that disorder becomes so detrimental that they end up in our emergency room or a crisis response center, or even, you know, if they need an inpatient stay. We do have a young child clinic to address some of those concerns that parents may have before they become problems for kids later. We run the emergency rooms at both King of Prussia Hospital and Children's Hospital here in the Philadelphia campus, offer crisis services for kids. We have a speakers bureau that talks to schools and does some community-based work. We have a community-based division that does Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids. And that's probably one of the greatest accomplishments that we've had. We try to roll that to all of our community divisions, where we have social workers and psychiatrists who are on site with pediatricians and working collaboratively, because we do also know that parents go to the doctor they trust most. Very few parents reach out directly to a psychiatrist. They're going to reach out to their pediatrician. And CHOP has an amazing network of pediatric practices. So being able to capitalize on co-location and being able to deliver care, again, when a person needs it in a place where they are, is really important.
In the last several years, we've made pretty considerable investments, north of $100 million, in a number of facilities to treat children with mental health crisis and disorders. Can you talk about those facilities?
Sure. One of the first changes to the campus was when we added the Center for Advanced Behavior Health at 4601 Market Street. That space is an amazing, beautiful space that offers both outpatient care for kids essentially birth through 21. In that space, we have a Center for Disruptive Behaviors, we have an anxiety disorders, we have treatment for mood disorders, we have eating disorder treatment in that space, we have the Center for Autism in that space, we do testing in that space. There are also 2 mood disorder partial hospitalization programs and a mood disorder intensive outpatient program. There are also 2 eating disorder partial hospital programs and an intensive outpatient program. So when we opened that setting, we also expanded from just being outpatient versus crisis to outpatient plus 2 of the sort of intermediate steps between outpatient and inpatient treatment. In that space, we also have a bridge clinic that we can offer for kids who are seen in the emergency department. Recently, we also opened our Behavioral Health and Crisis Center at 54th and Cedar, which is a hospital that's co-located with the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. And in that space, we actually have 3 different programs, which are, again, an extension of the continuum of care. We have a walk-in crisis center that's open 24/7 that serves children and adolescents under the age of 17. We have a 3-bed crisis stabilization unit, which offers sort of an observation period for kids 6 to 17 who may have more needs that can be addressed than in a typical sort of an emergency crisis visit, but doesn't require acute inpatient psychiatric hospitalization. And we have, for the first time in 25 years, an inpatient psychiatric unit, which opened with 10 beds, but is actually slated to have 46 beds.
Maybe you could go a little deeper and tell us about how children would get to the crisis center and what type of children will be going there. And once they're stabilized, what children do you admit to the inpatient area? It's wonderful that we have this whole continuum of care, and I hope that most children can be treated in other environments, but some children cannot be. So can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. The Crisis Response Center actually is composed of 2 different pieces. There's what people might think of as like a psychiatric emergency room. And then there's a part that's called like a little crisis stabilization unit. So people can be referred there from a physician. They can be referred there from school. They may self-refer. We are located at the PHMC campus, which is also co-located with the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. And at that space, people can walk up, they can drive in, they don't need a referral. Essentially, when kids are going there, there's some type of crisis. And what does a crisis look like? So is it that the child is suicidal? Maybe. But it could be that the kid has become more angry and no one understands why. And in the crisis response center, there's multiple levels of care. Kids will be seen by a mental health evaluator. They'll see a psychiatrist and they'll get treatment. It's not merely a referral space to say, okay, we understand you have this problem, so now we're going to refer you to a community aspect. We're going to do some treatment in that setting. And then whatever follow-up treatment is needed, we will refer to, but we want to make sure that we're actually addressing the crisis in the moment and then building on the strengths of the family and the child. And in that moment, being able to help parents and not just with a referral. So really doing some crisis intervention. That crisis intervention may look like a family therapy session. It may look like creating a way for families to better communicate. It may look like pulling in and saying, what is it that you need right now? Is the stress that's happening in part because, you know, mom needs to go to work and this child is having difficulty and wants more of mom? How do we build support for this child and the family and the community? Some kids may come and be more ill or have had a suicide attempt or be thinking about suicide. Or you might have a very young child, like maybe you have a 6-year-old who has never been diagnosed with ADHD, but the school is saying they can't come back because they can't sit still and they're running around and they're completely dysregulated. For those kids, they may not need a psychiatric hospitalization. We have a 3-bed crisis stabilization unit. So that 6-year-old might be able to be admitted to the CSU, work with parents with some behavioral interventions, and maybe started on a stimulant or something else to help with the issues of the ADHD and not need a full hospitalization. Maybe 1 or 2 days of observation and then be able to go back to the community with support and with communication with the school about what this child may need. For those kids who need psychiatric hospitalization inpatient, that's a longer process. The national average for a child is around 7 to 10 days. And during that time, we would expect to do a fair amount of individual therapy with our patients, family therapy. We have built-in visitation associated with parent education as well. So if you come to visit your kid, there will be a bonus hour of education about whatever it is that you might need. We've worked really hard to build a team that includes a child and adolescent trained psychopharmacologist. So our pharmacist is actually has additional training specifically in medications that are targeted for children and adolescents. We have a board-certified behavior analyst who will help with staff and patients about how we can mold behavior, not to make people conform, but to help people understand what the rules of behavior are without taking away anyone's personal expression, but helping them to integrate into a situation. And especially for kids who are school phobic and maybe anxious or depressed, being able to be in a small community and figure out how to be in that community can be great for transferring that skill to moving back to the classroom. So earlier we talked about my being triple boarded. The reason I'm triple boarded is because I see whole children. I don't split kids into their mental health and their physical health. We have to look at a child and we have to look at that whole child because any medicine I may prescribe isn't just going to affect their mental health. It may have an effect on their physical health. And we want to make sure that there's nothing physically going on with the kid that may be giving us a picture of a neuropsychiatric syndrome that is purely psychiatric when it might have a medical underpinning to it.
Tell me about some of the research that we're doing here at CHOP.
So we are doing quite a bit of research looking at multiple different ways of how we can address this crisis, but also how we got here. So we're doing depression and suicide screening in primary care and how we can actually make sure we are catching people again with at the physician they are most comfortable with, the pediatrician. We have been doing quite a bit of suicide prevention research in the emergency department. We have launched quite a number of genetics research for both autism, suicide, and schizophrenia. And we're also doing research in the social factors that contribute to suicide in particular, but also in overall mental illness. Again, as I said earlier, we know that most serious mental illness develops in childhood or adolescence. If we can figure out some things that we may be able to tweak, we can make a totally different outcome for many of the children that we see.
So you've talked about the new Cedar Avenue Hospital, what we call Cedar Avenue, affectionately here at CHOP at 54th and Cedar in West Philadelphia, just a few miles from our Philadelphia campus. You have talked with me about a wish list that you have for a special space. Maybe you can share that with our listeners.
One of the things that I think people sometimes misunderstand about mental health is the importance of exercise and the importance of fresh air. You know, when a kid is hospitalized, they spend a lot of time indoors. And right now, we don't have an outdoor area. One of the things that I feel is imperative is having an outdoor space for kids to play. We do have a beautiful gym space, and I welcome anyone who wants to come see the space. It's lovely. It's not the same as being outside. It's not the same as having fresh air on your skin. And it's not the same as being able to run and breathe and jump and be in the outside world. And we know that exercise is really good for depression. We know that exercise is really good for mental health. If you think about it, when you're in the winter, and you may be one of those people who, like me, works from dark to dark, but when it starts to get a little bit sunny and you go out and you feel the sunshine on your skin, you may inadvertently smile. That's an expression of your mental health. So for a kid to be able to go outside to put their hands in some dirt, because part of what we envision that space will also be a horticultural space, but a space that they can play ball or, you know, play tag, be able to work in the dirt, be able to just breathe fresh air. I think that it's as valuable for some kids, it will be as valuable as a therapy session.
Well, I hope that we're able to make that dream become a reality for you and most importantly for our patients.
Absolutely.
So I know there's a national shortage of people with your background, child and adolescent psychiatry, and you also are a pediatrician. What's behind that? Why is there a national shortage? Certainly it's got to be challenging work, but tell us a little bit about your profession.
Well, I think that there are a couple of things that lead to that. Even when people choose child and adolescent fellowship, sometimes because all child psychiatrists are also adult certified, they may find that it's easier to work with adults. When you're working with a child, you're never working in isolation with one patient. You're working with a child, you're working with a family. And families are complicated. There are sometimes issues with reimbursement. In medicine, psychiatry is sometimes not as valued as other subspecialties, and the reimbursement rates have traditionally been lower. I think for families, it's very hard to find a child and adolescent psychiatrist because many don't accept insurance or don't work with very many payers, and to pay out of pocket is often extraordinarily difficult for families. You know, every year here at CHOP, we graduate about 5 child and adolescent psychiatrists. And we at CHOP also have the Post-Pediatric Portal Program, which is the program through which I did my training, which has pediatricians who are either in practice as pediatricians or, like me, come directly from pediatric residency with this additional training. And many of them will go back to their practices where they were. And so they may be doing a combination. Some will decide to do primarily psychiatry, but it's just a different field. It's not a field that often draws as many people who maybe want to do a different subspecialty.
And psychiatrists are not reimbursed at the same level as other subspecialists, like a cardiologist or a neonatologist. And the pay isn't consistent with other pediatric subspecialists, I
Correct.
Know.
Although one of the things that always tickles my fancy when we talk about this, I can't believe I just said tickles my fancy, I have now dated myself.
It seemed completely fine to me. So I'm right there with you.
In 1964, at the World's Fair, Isaac Asimov wrote, "What's the world going to be like in 50 years?" And he was looking at 2014. If you ever get an opportunity to look this up on the New York Times, it's available in their archives. One of the things I find most fascinating is he says, psychiatry will be the most important medical subspecialty. And he talks about how part of that will be because we have so many machines doing our work that we will have become bored and depressed and anxious because we are no longer doing things that we have other things doing it for us. I'm not going to say that Isaac Asimov predicted social media, but I think many of the insights he had in that article, whether it was written tongue-in-cheek or not, really are spot on for where we are right now.
So interesting. I'm definitely going to look that up. So all of us are caring about this mental health crisis for children. What are some things that we, all of us, can do? Me as a leader, our listeners can do. How can we advocate about this to others?
So we're not going to be able to solve the issues that are sort of plaguing the greater Philadelphia area. We're not going to be able to fill enough beds. We're not going to be able to provide enough therapy for all the kids who still need it. And things that we can do is write to your legislature, because they have more power than they would like for us to believe, to advocate for mental health services in schools. Again, that's where we know kids are. And if we can reach them there, we can probably prevent some of the issues that happen when we don't treat kids. And to teach things like resiliency, to teach things like being able to express yourself. I can't tell you how many kids, when I ask them, can you tell me what feeling word you have? And they'll say, I don't know. Because the language for that, it's not been taught. They really don't know what they're feeling. The other thing that I think is really big is tackling the stigma. You know, we talked at the very beginning about behavioral health versus mental health versus psychiatry. And, you know, people are sometimes, I think, afraid of that word, psychiatry, which may be why behavioral health has become a more palatable solution. But the fact is, there's still such stigma around having a problem that is not visible. There's still such stigma about what does it mean. And even people will make jokes about things that you would never make jokes about if it were a medical condition. I think one of the things that I appreciate about your commitment to behavioral health, which I have felt both when I was a fellow here and now as an attending, is that there does seem to be a real commitment. And I think if people could look at what does it mean when we talk about what does a kid who needs psychiatric or mental health care look like, and how important that is, as important as physical health.
Well, Dr. Turner, I have learned so much. I know our listeners learned so much from you today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
At CHOP, we make breakthroughs every day. You can learn more about our latest discoveries at chop.edu. I'm Madeline Bell. Thank you for listening.